I need your Bibles, if you have one, and turn to, let's have you turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. If you don't have your Bibles, that's okay. We'll flash the Bible text up on the screen behind us. And we're going to do, I mean, most of you, when you go to the doctor, you don't want to hear the doctor go on and on and on about all that's wrong with you, do you? It's kind of nice to have the doctor just say, here's what we can do to help you. So let me prepare you that today, a lot of what we're going to cover is a diagnosis of the sickness that's happening in the hearts of humans. Okay? Let me run that by again. It is mostly diagnosing, reviewing what's wrong with our hearts. Okay? Then we're going to describe it as a disease. Then eventually we'll talk about the symptoms of that disease, and then we'll settle into how God reveals to us what the cure is for that disease. Sound good? Disease, symptoms, cure. And we will work through this word called awe, A-W-E. And it is a word that indicates something very, very specific, and we'll read through that together. But put your finger in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, 15. We're going to get there. We're going to get there. But first, we're going to cover this in general. Here's the big idea, that only when God is in his rightful place will we set ourselves and others in the appropriate place in our hearts. So imagine, if you would, in our hearts, there is a throne, and then there are lesser seats. Until God is invited and is entertained and is hosted in the throne of our hearts, only then will we appropriately seat ourselves and others. Okay? So that's where we begin with the big idea. The big idea is that there's a throne, every heart has one, and it is either filled by God or it's filled by ourselves or someone else or something else. And I hope thrones still mean to you what they mean to me, which is a place of authority and rulership, if that's a word. And so that's one way to think of our hearts. So we're going to be talking about this word awe. And it has a supplemental book that goes along with it by an author that we love and appreciate. His name is Paul Tripp. It's a book called Awe. And we are preaching these texts from the Bible. Our authority and truth comes from the Bible. But Paul Tripp has written extensively on this idea of awe, A-W-E. And in fact, I'll take a couple of minutes here to read some of his commentary on our subject today in Romans chapter 1. But let's first define awe. Okay, we did this last week, but I want to review so that you don't hear that word and it starts to kind of get fuzzy, because if it does, you're going to get lost sooner than normal. Okay? Here's what awe means. Awe means whenever, which means at all times, your heart is filled with astonishment and or delight. So when your heart is delighted in something, when your heart, I'll add to it, when your heart desires something, when your heart is astonished by something, we are describing it together as the word awe. It is another word that we use for it is this, to adore. Or you might recognize it this way, the word worship. And even though you've heard this said, and maybe you have said these words yourself, you probably recognize these phrases. Listen to this one. Here's a phrase. You recognize this? Maybe you've said it, maybe you've heard it. And even though you have heard it or said it, here's the phrase, worship was so awesome this Sunday. Let me give you another phrase. I didn't care much for worship this morning. Let me run another one by it. I tried attending that church, but you know, I didn't mind the preaching as much, but I didn't really enjoy the worship. Or the worship really wasn't that great. Now, let me suggest that if we use those phrases, it reveals that we don't properly understand the word worship. We don't really get it. We don't really fully comprehend what worship is. And here's why. Because worship doesn't begin and end during a service. There is no time when you and I are spend awake when we are worshiping someone or something. Worship is not a segment of a worship service that includes the band and songs. Okay? So when we say those words or when we hear those words, what it indicates is that we don't quite have a grasp on what worship is, and that's why we're going to walk through together what that word means, because you cannot use the word worship to describe singing during a worship service. There is no such thing as worship that begins and ends. We are never, this is going to be a tough one because it's a double negative. If you're an English teacher, professor, or otherwise it's your hobby, cover your ears. You're never not worshiping. Never not worshiping. So our heart, here's what the premise is. Our heart is always astonished, delighted, or desiring something or someone. Always. And here's why. Because at the very beginning, God created us in our foundational bones, right in our DNA. We are hardwired for awe, for worship, for astonishment and delight. And this begins with infants. And I'm so inspired by infants. I don't know about you, but I can just watch a little infant for a, seems like, limitless amount of time. The only time I can spend longer watching people is at the state fair in the Midway. But otherwise, I love watching little babies and seeing them, seeing things catch their eye. Have you ever seen a baby look up at a mobile that's spinning around and it just kind of moves its head from one little thing to another? And eventually the babies begin to work their way around to noticing their hands, and they'll start to eventually discover that their feet are right there in front of them. Have you ever seen that? And then they pull, and eventually, like all things that are near a baby, it winds up pulling it right to its mouth, right? But the feet catch the baby's eye, and it's astonished by its feet. And these little rubber bands called legs, they just stretch right into their mouth. They're astonished. But there's so many other things, right? What's the idea of a rattle? You rattle the rattle, and it catches the bait. Do I do a good infant? I've been working on it all week. I don't know what your infant looks like, but mine all look like they were semi-drunk. So here's what I wanted to illustrate, that when you're catching an infant's eye, it is appealing to its astonishment in its heart, right? And what starts as a happy infant eventually leads to hurting adults. And it's the same feature. And it is that the heart delights and astonishes and desires something. And happy infants always, always, always give way eventually to hurting adults by the same exact DNA, that hardwire for worship. And it's not long before the baby's capacity for wonder begins to shape the person's desires, their thoughts, their choices, their decisions, their words, and their actions. I want to introduce you to three people. And they are written about here in this book that Paul Tripp comments. And here's what I want to do. I'm going to read you a little bit about their life. There are three adults named Scott, Jen, and John. If you are Scott, or you are Jen, or you are John, this is not about you. I don't want you to get nervous. Okay, let me introduce you to Scott. I could die today, and no one would notice, Scott complained. Depressed and alone, all Scott wanted was to die. Why does nothing good happen to me? Where are all the friends I once had? What's the point? I'm 42 with a junk job. I have to take care of aging parents, unlike any of my friends. What a nice life. I wake up in the morning and I can't find a reason for living. I wish I could just turn off the breathing button. He didn't feel like it was much to ask this. Just let my life be easy and a little predictable for once. If I had that, I'd at least be satisfied. That's Scott. Let me introduce you to someone else. Her name is Jen. She says, we're going to get into her life a little bit. She used to love going out with Kathy, but it had become increasingly difficult. They had gotten married at the same time. In fact, they had talked about having a double wedding. Whenever they were together, Kathy talked about how wonderful her marriage was. But Jen's marriage hadn't produced the happiness she desired. Jen couldn't stop the envy that she felt. Why had Kathy gotten to live her dream? Jen started finding excuses for not meeting with Kathy. All that seemed unfair to her. Let me introduce you to John. John was the quintessential loner. He trusted no one. He was vulnerable with no one. He gave no one the chance to take advantage of him. He had been burned way too many times, and it wasn't going to happen to him again. He lived with his guard up at all times. He mastered the non-answer. He lived behind impenetrable emotional walls. He joined nothing. He hung out with no one, and that was just the way he liked it. He didn't need anyone in his life but himself anymore. Now, at first, these all seem like different life scenarios. They all seem like different people with different issues that they're all facing, and obviously different circumstances that had driven them to that place. But the stories of these people, in fact, although they seem different, each of their struggles results from the same problem. It's the same core issue. None of the people in the stories that I just read to you, none of their hearts are at rest. None of their hearts are delighting. And this, specifically, is what it sounds like when our awe problem is in action. It sounds like their lives. Now, let me capture their struggle with some life-changing principles that we're going to discuss in these terms: disease, symptoms, and cure. We all suffer from a disease, and you've got this in your notes, and here's what the disease is called. It's awe replacement disease. Awe replacement disease. We all suffer from the same disease, and it's described in Romans chapter 1. And behind me on the screen, you're going to see Romans chapter 1. Here's how Paul the Apostle wrote the letters to his New Testament church. Here's how he describes the problems with these three people. Here's how he describes it. These people who were suffering and hurting and living in pain, they traded the truth about God for a lie. So they worshiped and served the things God created instead of the Creator himself, who is worthy of eternal praise. So their core struggle for these people who are suffering, the core struggle, the core issue is not the unpleasant circumstances. It's not the unfriendly and unloving and unkind people in their lives. It's not the conflict that they're having with people in their lives. The core struggle is not the disappointing results of their life. In fact, they all suffer from a deeper problem, and it is a disease called awe replacement. Every sinner, every human who is born into the human race quickly replaces awe of the Creator with awe of something that's in creation, something that God has made. They replace the truth, which is the knowledge of God, that he's revealed himself and has astonished us with himself, and we've replaced that with something that God has created. And this disease requires that we buy into a lie. It requires it. We have to first buy into a lie. It's the lie of all lies. It is the lie that was first told in the Garden of Eden. It's the lie that destroys countless lives, crushing them with unrealistic expectations. It crushes us with disappointment. This lie crushes us with anger. It crushes us with hopelessness. It's the lie that leads to death. And it's the hope that the Red Sox will win a World Series again. Let me get back on track. Sorry, that came right out of my heart. Here's the lie. It is the belief, here's the lie that ruins people's lives. It's the belief that life can be found somewhere outside the Creator. That life and delight and deep, satisfying, and gratifying astonishment, that life can be found somewhere outside the Creator. It's the hope. This is what it is. It's the hope that true spiritual peace and rest and contentment and satisfaction and joy can be found somewhere in creation. It's the lie. That's the big lie. And if you think about the myriad of dysfunctions that is sweeping across our culture and around the world in the human community, it can be traced to one thing. It's where their heart is looking for awe. What their heart is awed by. Now imagine this. If we human beings were created to live in a heart-gripping, life-shaping awe of God, and we were, then replacing the awe of God with the awe of something else will always lead to pain. It'll always lead to hurt. It'll always lead to frustration. So here are the symptoms of this disease. When we replace vertical awe, I want you to picture this. Vertical awe, right? This is vertical. All of you who are geometry people, this is still vertical, right? If you replace vertical awe, and the symbol here is that my adoration, my delight, my astonishment is focused Godwardly. When we replace that with the awe of self, you've got a blank here. Painful things happen in our horizontal community. Painful things. When we're vertical awe is replaced with ourselves, then painful things begin to happen in our life and in our community. It's more sinister than it sounds at first diagnosis. We do not just generally put creation in the place of the Creator. Listen to this. We don't just generally fill the place that belongs. The throne of our hearts is not filled with the creation. Most of us, and this is so much more kind of, I think, sinister, we don't replace God with the things He created. Most of us replace God with ourselves. We sit in God's throne. And this is where our lives begin to show symptoms. Right from the start, it started right in the garden. It's sin that replaces worship of God with the worship of self. We somehow, in a level that's unnoticed, always replace awe of God in our hearts with the awe of self. And this is what sin does to us all. This is what sin does. The worship of self. Listen to this. See if this resonates with you. I wonder if you can hear some of your own life and some of your own struggles in this list. Okay, listen to this. Here's a list for you. The worship of self makes us focus obsessively on how we feel. And how we feel about how we feel. Then, how we feel about what we'll need to do to alter the way that we feel. Isn't that good? It's Paul Tripp. We get focused on how we feel, and then we're like, how do I feel about how I feel? I know what I have to do to fix this. I'm not sure how I feel about that. The worship of self also replaces submission with self-rule, gratitude with demands for more, faith with self-reliance, vertical joy with horizontal envy. It replaces a rest in God's sovereignty with a quest for personal control over our own life and circumstances and the people around us. That's what it means when we say, if you're sitting in the awe throne of your own heart, this is what starts to happen in our lives. How many of you heard the phrase, it's the sin under the sin? That's a good way to describe it. It lies at the bottom of a whole range of human pain and struggles. So there are symptoms of this disease. And if you can follow along with me, can I read you another list? I hope that's okay. See if you can tune into this list. Here we go. Symptoms about the sin that's under the sin. If awe of self is plaguing and filling our heart. Listen to this. We live for our own glory. We set our own rules for our life. We expect others to serve our agenda. We curse whatever gets in our way. We hate having to wait. We get upset when we have to go without. We strike back when we think that we've been wronged. We do all we can to satisfy our own cravings. We think too much about our own pleasure. We envy those who have what we think we deserve. We pout when we think we've been overlooked. We hate suffering of any kind. We manipulate others for our own good. We attempt to work ourselves into positions of power and control. We are obsessed about what is best for us. We demand more than we serve. We take more than we give. We long to be first and we hate being last. We are all too concerned with being right, being noticed, and being affirmed. We find it easier to judge those who have offended us than to forgive them. We require life to be predictable, satisfying, and easy. We do all these things because we are full of ourselves, in awe, more of ourselves than of God. Now that's quite a list. I mean, if you escape that, congratulations, Jesus, you did it. But isn't that a great description of what begins to happen under the surface, and those are the symptoms start to show themselves in our life? Why? Because at the center, sitting on the throne of our lives, is not the God who created us, but it's us who have been created by God. So here's what we discover is the solution. To replace our horizontal addictions and affliction, we have to replace those things with vertical awe. When my heart is enamored with the stunning glory of the unchangeable God, when I'm living in conscious awe of Him, I don't need to look vigilantly for life in other people and in my circumstances day after day. Vertical awe puts my heart at ease. It gives my soul rest. Vertical awe produces contentment and satisfaction. It puts me in my place, and it reminds me. It reminds me that I am small, and that since I'm a creature of the one who is far greater, it cannot be all about me. But there's a cure for this. There's a cure. There's a specific way that God has revealed to us that we can begin to turn back this disease and start to see a cure emerge. Since Jesus died for everyone, you've got this in your notes, those who receive his new life will no longer live for themselves. If you've received the new life, since Jesus died for everyone, when you receive this new life by putting your faith in Jesus and when you trust him as your supreme and infinite source of satisfaction and gratification, when you do, you will no longer live for yourself. Instead, people who do this, they will live for Jesus instead. So it's another replacement. We replace ourselves with a savior, a rescuer, a redeemer who is worthy and who is eternal, who is infinitely valued. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 5. Chapter 5, verse 15. Here's how Paul describes this. He died for everyone so that those who receive his new life will no longer live for who? For themselves. They no longer live for themselves. One of the byproducts, one of the fruits of a new life devoted to Jesus is that you no longer, you're freed from living for yourself. Instead, what do? They live for Christ who died and was raised for them. So here we see the great replacement again. Now, I'm going to go very slowly through this. I want you to see what has occurred in this transaction. Because it's easy to glaze over, especially if you've been around the church family for a long time. It's easy to just kind of breeze past this. And if you're new to the Christian faith here this morning, it's easy for this just to be thrown out by Christians, and it's just abstract, and it's hard to really track what's happening. Let me see if I can explain it at least a little bit in detail. Christ's death and his resurrections, in other words, was intended to produce our death to self-centered living. And it was supposed to help us say no to ourselves and yes to Christ. And here's how. It provided a new object of our awe. It provided someone to take our eyes off of ourselves and to become the new object and source and center of our heart's awe and adoration and astonishment. That means of doing that was the Lord who we know is Jesus in the scriptures, he came and he lived perfectly, right? So that he could go to the cross as a spotless lamb. He died willingly, satisfying God's just requirement. Jesus rose again and he defeated the power of sin, but not just the power of sin, but also death and the grave in his resurrection. And part of why Christ did all this was to give us back our awe, that we would live for him once again, and that we would celebrate his awesome glory, not just now, but forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. He has become the center all over again of our heart's desire and astonishment and delight. Also, when you experience new life, you no longer need to live the old life of proving ourselves because we're already justified. We no longer need to live the old life of promoting ourselves. We've already been adopted by the Father. We don't have to promote ourselves and say, look at me, here I am, don't miss me. We also no longer need to protect ourselves. We've already been forgiven. We can be transparent with God, transparent with others, and rest in the grace of God's forgiveness, that he takes us as we are and he's working in us and growing us, which means we're now free. We're now free. All that aside, ourselves, we've been set free from the burden of living for ourselves, and now, listen, here's what we're able to do. We're now free to prefer others, to prefer them above ourselves, and we're free to promote Jesus and not ourselves. And the symptoms of awe replacement disease are expressed most of the time. These symptoms kind of show up in our emotions. And some of you have, how many of you have ever used the phrase, or probably many of you have used the phrase, I just get like this. You ever use that phrase? I just get like this. I tend to be emotional. Others of you have probably less emotional, and you've mastered maybe using more reason and logic. Maybe you're more even-tempered. You're a little less up and down. But in our emotions, we can learn something. You've got a blank there to fill in. Listen, in order to kind of start implementing this cure, here's where we start. In order to deal with the symptoms, we have to listen to what your emotional life is telling you about what has captured your awe. Most of us probably cannot identify what has captured our awe, but if you listen to your emotions are telling you what's in your heart and what your heart adores. It's your emotion. Your emotions will always reveal the true thoughts, your true motives, your true desires, your true longings, hopes, and dreams that are residing in your heart. Your emotional highs and lows and joys and sorrows will be connected to and will always flow out of what has captured your awe. Last week I mentioned that I had this embarrassing moment in my life not too long ago, and I wish I could just make it go away. But you know what it did? It was an emotional reaction to something that completely caught me off guard. I'm free from road rage, thank God. About 70% of the time, I'm completely free. Don't laugh, it's better than your percentage, I bet it. But some months back, one of the things that is I really like is I like a value. I like a good bargain. And I really, really enjoy saving time and saving money. I like a good value. And I find myself celebrating when I score a bargain. But if I'm honest with myself, I do a little pouting when I miss out on something. You know, sometimes, even though I consider myself a rewards card thrifty shopper, sometimes I don't go to the half-off sale on a Saturday or a Friday night for those who are rewards card members. It's exclusive. I mean, it's exclusive. It's one of the perks. Sometimes I don't go. Do you know why? Because at a certain time of the day, I'm sure I've missed all the great values, and I don't want to go mope around the store miserable that I missed everything that was. So some of you do this, I'm sure, with your flea markets, right? Your antiquing, and you discover a bargain. Well, I'm a fan myself. Recently, I was shopping for a used car. I searched the web for months. And I learned a lot of things along the way. And it took a lot of time to learn those things about shopping the web or the internet or using Craigslist and eBay and cars.com and whatever. And it took a long time. I had prepared myself that possibly the car that was going to land in my driveway was currently as far as Virginia, but I was okay, I'm gonna drive that far to get a car that's out of state and out of salt. One day I was in Costco. I received a notification from my Craigslist Plus app. It's a perk, it's something that, you know, it's rewarded to Craigslist customers who are exclusive, elite, kind of. So I got a notification on my phone that someone had just posted a vehicle, specifically the kind that I was looking for. I opened the app and realized that not only was this posted, and I had the app searching all over the region, it was also in Baldwinsville. So in a panic, I tapped the address, and the address turns out it's in Radisson. I may or may not have left my cart sitting in Costco. Less than a half hour after this person posted on Craigslist, I was in the driveway. Here's what I discovered. It was a Florida car. In the winter time, it was from Florida originally. He drove it up after some years in Florida. And then once he got it here in the central New York area, it was stored in the garage during the winters for the last few years. No salt anywhere. When I lifted the hood, it looked new, showroom-ish. That's a little exaggeration. It looked fantastically clean, like it would if it wasn't rusty. And the price, you might be wondering, was lower than I was expecting to pay. I had found my car. Took a ride with my daughter, drove back in the driveway, exchanged some words with the gentleman, said something to the effect of, I'll see you tomorrow and I'll be back. So it happened to be a Saturday night. So on Sunday, after our services were over, I called him about 1 o'clock and he said, listen, I didn't really know, if you were gonna for sure buy it. So I sold it this morning. Right? I know. I said, I'm sorry, what? He said, a guy called me, listen to this, who was driving through the state of New York, saw it on Craigslist, and he stopped off and he put a down payment on it. And I said, will he have any idea if you suddenly lose the money and sold it to someone else? I'm kidding. He said, this guy was driving through town, stopped over. So I got off the phone with him, and my wife says to me, did you not tell him you were doing the Lord's work on Sunday morning? You can't sell the car out from under a minister who's doing the Lord's work on a Sunday morning. Can't do that. He said, here's what he told me. I tried to reach you all morning. You didn't reach me because I was doing the Lord's work. So at 1 o'clock, it had become, he said, now listen, the guy had already, he's only put a down payment on, but he said he'd be back by the end of the day. And the guy eventually calls me back and he said, it's gone. He just bought it. The whole thing's gone. And I said to myself, it's no big deal. And then listen to this. I wish I could tell you this never happened. I started to get short of breath. And eventually, my short of breath, I'm telling you, it starts to move towards hyperventilating. I began to make groaning noises out of my gut. Eventually, Raquel comes around the corner, and listen to this, I'm kneeling on top of my bed like this. Oh, no, oh, my God in heaven. Now, meanwhile, on a serious note, people around the world are dying unjustly. Right? And every Sunday, how many times do I remind you, there's bigger things in the world than you and what you want and so on. And it got worse. This went on and on and on. I was like, I'm concerned about you. And I'm like, can you get my puffer? Can you get my puffer? And here's what I realized. You know what I realized? That I didn't just like a value, saving time and money. I loved it. I loved it. And I had started to think in my mind, I'm gonna have to start this process all over. I'm gonna have to go back on the apps that I've been using, back on the internet. I'm going to have to start making more phone calls to people who are not telling the truth about how much they want for their vehicle. I am going to start the whole thing all over again, and the best vehicle that I've ever seen since I've been shopping just passed me by. Now, you might say it's only a car, but I couldn't stop thinking of all that had been invested in it. And here's the point I want you to get. Our emotions tell us something. Our reactions to things are a window into our heart to be able to see what is on the throne of your heart. And this is why this saddens me. Here's why. Because you've heard me say how many times I read the news, I keep up with the headlines. How many, this is going to get serious fast, brace yourself. This is why this shocks me. How many unborn babies are terminated, aborted, killed daily? And you've heard me say this before, refugees who are exploited and abused. Kids and young people caught up painfully in the trafficking and whatever kind of horror happening in parts of the region at the hands of terrorists and extremists. Right now, here's why I bring that up. I do not hyperventilate reading what's happening around the world. I say, this is so sad. Somebody ought to do something. God help them. And I really feel like at times I move with compassion. But you know what I discovered that day on my bed hyperventilating? By the way, I grabbed a puffer. I was puffing. This is so bad. Making noises I've never made before. But here's what it demonstrated. My heart, Dan, your heart is off. This is not an appropriate emotional response. And it told me that I have a heart devoted to value, and I adore and delight and I'm astonished by saving things, time and money, more than I am sensing and feeling and carrying the weight that God carries when he thinks about the real injustices in the world. By the way, you all know God well, and you know that I ended up with a vehicle with almost exact same kind of car, listen to this, with 40,000 less miles. Isn't that satisfying? In the meantime, I learned by listening to my emotions. And you know what we're listening for? Listen to this. There's a telltale sign. If you listen to your emotions, you know how they're going to sound. If your heart is... if you yourself are in the throne of your heart, if the awe of self is diseased your heart, here's what you're going to hear. You're going to hear complaining come out of your mouth. That's what's going to happen. That's what pretty much it's going to sound like. The universal language of sinners in this broken world is complaint. When you're at the center, when you feel entitled, when your desires dominate your heart, and when it's really all about you, you will have much to complain about. It is amazing how much more natural complaint is for us than thanks, or how much more we tend to grumble than we tend to praise. Here are some signs of trouble. If you talk much more about what you want than about what you've been given, here's another sign of trouble. When you compare what you have to what others have and how little of the time that you spend being satisfied with what you already have. See, we don't have a complaining problem. We don't have a grumbling problem. I don't have a value problem. I don't have a shopping problem. I don't have an automobile problem. Here's the problem. When awe of self replaces the awe of God, praise will be rare, but complaining and grumbling will be plentiful. Have you noticed that? Here's how we react. We confess. You've got a blank here as we finish up. Confess that your awe amnesia has caused you to routinely replace awe of God with the awe of self. Confess it. And you know what it means? Here's what it means. It means I confess that most of the time my biggest question is, how am I doing? Most of the time it means confessing that I have no bigger concern than my own satisfaction and comfort. It means that I have to confess that I ask all of life to serve me, submit to my interests, and to deliver whatever I demand. And it's the sin in God amnesiacs, those who have forgotten God. It's because of that we become desperate, self-focused, unhappy, demanding, disappointed addicts of the created world. And the only way to get back our awe, this is in your notes, the only way to get back our awe is to cling to the grace. Cling. Let your heart and let it cling to the power of grace all over again. It's the only thing that can drive us to freedom and contentment and the awe of God. Back to awe of God is seeing the work that God has done in the cross of Jesus. And here's what we're tempted to do. We're tempted to say, I just have to get more serious about my faith. We're tempted to say this, I just have to get more serious about doing the right thing. I have to get more serious about following the rules and learning this Christian faith a little bit better. But following the rules will never be enough to save us. We don't have any power within us to defeat this. Here's a question for you. What set of rules or what level of obedience can return our wonder to our heart, our amazement, our astonishment, and our delight in our worship? There is no set of rules that will free us. Here's what happens. When we cling to the power of grace, it humbles us. And you know what we discover? God's story is a greater story than ours. Here's what we discover. God's kingdom is grander than our kingdom. It's bigger and far more important than our little kingdom. When we cling to grace, we see that God has bigger plans for us. And the awe of God means that God has a plan far bigger and better than any plans that I had for myself. When we humbly accept the very, very real but bad news of awe replacement disease, then you will seek and celebrate the very good news of God's grace. Because of Christ's work to glorify his Father, glorify ultimately to bring great fame to his own name, grace is yours for the taking. Let's pray. Father, may our hearts pay attention today to the work you're doing. And for those of us who need to, may our hearts cling to grace today. Help us. This is tough. This is difficult. This is challenging. And so many of our dysfunctions, distortions, our pain and struggle and suffering, so many of it is related to this very topic. Pray today that you would identify deeply in our hearts where our hearts are at, and help us to come back to all that you are, the one who obediently and perfectly lived, the one who suffered and died, the one who in great glory was raised again. May you and you alone capture the awe of our hearts again, we ask in Jesus' name.